And for George Norrie tonight, it's getting ready for that health expo where you can go see him live. You can find out more by going to the website, coasttocoastam.com. Be ready for a great week of shows next week on Coast to Coast. And it is the final countdown before the zombie apocalypse. That's coming up tomorrow night. Don't miss that show. Podcast it if you need to. Who will survive? Who won't? You can actually make some very interesting projections on who will live based on the last 100 years of human history, particularly human history in the West. You'll hear about theories of international politics and zombies tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. You know, we threw out the subject of Nobby, the North Carolina Bigfoot. So far, nobody's bid on that for open lines. A little bit on the Japanese meltdown that continues by the hour to get worse. And the other question that so many people in Japan have, as well as around the world, is who can be trusted when it comes to making accurate projections about what's really going on at the bottom of those nuclear reactors? There is plutonium that is, you know, one of the most dangerous substances on the planet that has escaped into the atmosphere. And if a lot of it got out, it would mean a lot of deaths. So far, no way to measure that, but they're keeping track of it. And we may even have more on that before the end of the show. What I do know is we'll have lots more of your open line calls next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. An update here just from 24 minutes ago, the story from the Associated Press. In Japan, U.S. naval barges loaded with fresh water are getting ever closer to Japan's overheated nuclear plant to help workers who scrambled Saturday, Japanese time, to stem a worrying rise in radioactivity and remove dangerously contaminated water from the facility. So the dumping seawater plan, that frantic bid to stabilize the reactors, not working, fresh water on the way from the U.S. and back to open lines. On Coast to Coast, we pick it up with Lee in East Brunswick, New Jersey, on Coast to Coast. Lee?
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing very well. Where do you want to take us?
To this dream I had. It's a little off the beaten path. But, you know, I had a lot of strange dreams in my life, right? But this was maybe 1997, and I never could understand where it came from. I was working nights. I got off work, and I was asleep, and it was afternoon. Never, I had a lot of strange dreams, even ones where I fought demons. You know, I never thought that was weird. But this one, I was in a car. It was like from one of those old gangster cars. You remember those from the gangster movies?
Yeah.
I ended up in the car, and there was no driver, and there was a lot of fog around. And we were on the wrong side of the road. I wasn't driving. I was in the passenger side, and when I looked over, there was nobody driving, but I couldn't move. I just had to sit there. And I ended up at an old house and had a little white picket fence around it. And I went to the door, and something black ran past my leg. It actually rubbed up against me. I assumed it was a dog. So when I walked around the house and I looked, and I had one of those big picture windows, and it had a bubblegum machine in there with the big gumballs, and it said, the world's first gumball machine.
Okay.
So I went back around.
I want to get kind of like an end game on the dream thing. So how long before we get to the payoff on the dream?
Real quick.
Okay.
I get into the house, and there's a lady in the window, and she's in the kitchen, and she said, I haven't seen you in a long time. And I said, I know. And I glanced over, and there was a couch there with a guy sitting on it, and he said he was petting the black thing that walked past me that I thought was a dog. I said, why are you petting a dog? And he said, it's not a dog, it's a sheep.
Okay.
And he showed me its teeth.
All right.
And then when I turned back around, it was these little, I don't know what they were, but they were eating. They looked like little people.
Okay. What is it that you think that dream was telling you?
I don't know, because to the right of them was a shiny bowl with raw meat, and it was steam
okay.
coming from it.
Dude, we could go all night with the symbolism.
No,
I get that, but I mean, what? I mean, there's got to be other than just, you know, what? What do you think it means?
Well, once the end of the dream came, and the room itself got foggy, and I said, "What year is this?" And somebody said $8.90. And then somebody said it's more like $18.90, and I woke up.
Okay, here's a question.
Now,
here's a question.
I looked it up.
Okay, go ahead.
Created in the early, late 1900s or 1800s.
Okay. What if you're everybody in your dream, then what does that dream mean?
I don't know.
Well, that's what you got to think about. And that's what you got to think about, because that's where I think some of the most interesting dream work that's done is to consider if you are every person, if you're every voice and you're talking to you, what were you trying to tell you in your dream? Let's go to Russ in Wichita, Kansas, on Coast to Coast, on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Russ?
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm well. Where do you want to take us?
Well, I had a question about a follow-up on the Chris McCann thing.
Okay.
You know, weren't they supposed to go up in the rapture on the 21st of March?
No. 21st of May, dude. They got 2 months to string it along a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Still looking.
Well, I'd read something about the 21st, that things are supposed to start on the 21st.
Here's how this is the game plan, as I understand it.
Okay.
Because Chris McCann came back on with George on Coast to Coast and was talking about this. So the events start on May 21st. They may not end. The rapture won't be completed until sometime in October, but we will see the signs of rapture beginning as of May 21st.
Okay.
You believe it? Do you think it's going to happen?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because, you know, this is somebody saying that they can basically decode the Bible. And when the Bible says, you know, nobody knows the time but God, I mean,
right.
That's kind of hubris to me.
I agree. Harold Camping is the guy who's kind of behind that. So we'll see what he says. We've been trying to reach out to them to see if they'll come on the show with us that night, that Saturday night, May 21st. We'd love to get him. We'll see whether they'll come on and explain maybe where they are getting reports of the sign of rapture. Maybe people will have begun to get raptured on May 21st, and we'll have the first word of it here on Coast to Coast. But first, let's go to Walter on the Skype line in Toronto on Coast to Coast for open lines. Walter? Digging it. Rocket. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Okay. Are we on hold? Because I swear to God, that's the same stuff that's on my dentist's office phone line right there. So that's like, it's really freaking me up. Let's go to TJ west of the Rockies in Albuquerque on Coast to Coast. TJ?
It's close. It's TJ, yeah. It's an honor to be on with you, Connie. Always listen to the shows. Love it. So I have some breaking news I want you to hear. I want other people to hear around the world. And guess what? I believe that Japan and all these earthquakes have been happening after that 9.0. That was like the start of the fuse. And I believe that it's turning the base into Swiss cheese. So if you catch my drift, that it's going to cause Japan to go submerge and fall. And that's going to cause the biggest tsunami that we could ever imagine.
That you think Japan's going to fall into the ocean?
I'm thinking, because really, if you go in and see how many earthquakes that have been happening since time, they're all happening at the base, right there below on the pedestal that it's on. And what's happening is like causing Swiss cheese. So what it's doing, it's loosening up the gravel and the earth, and the really deep ones, really high ones. So it's causing it to crack, and I believe it's going to fall in.
Well, I'm not sure of your tectonic science there, but I'll be curious. When do you think that will happen?
Well, I believe that it's happening soon.
Okay.
It's saying it's going to be, I don't know, it could happen tomorrow or it could happen.
Okay.
Or it could happen, I believe I'm saying, like, it's going to happen in the next couple of months.
All right. Well, very good. Sounds like your guys in the background are trying to get your attention, so I'll let you focus on them. And let's go to the first-time caller line. Drew is in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, on Coast to Coast. Drew?
Ian, hey, huge fan. Love the show. Been listening for a long time.
We're glad to have you on Coast to Coast. Thank you.
Thanks. Have fun tonight?
Yeah. I always like doing open lines. It's a gas.
Well, I just had a question I wanted to throw out there. I don't know if this is something I came up with or if other people have come up with this before me, But in regards to the whole theory of the moon landing being a hoax,
right?
There's a lot of evidence that's really compelling that speaks that it might have been. But on the other hand, you got all the astronauts and techies and everybody else who, you know, swear they did it, and they probably did. My thought is maybe they had the set ready. Maybe they had all of that prepared in case they got to the moon and saw something that they didn't want the general public to see, in which case they then go to the set. So maybe we did go to the moon, but it was also hoaxed.
It was also hoaxed because when they got there, they saw something they didn't want, so they switched back to the set until they could get past it.
Okay. Right.
I think
two contingencies would bring that to mind would be like if they saw alien artifacts or architecture or ships, or if there was some weaponry up there from somebody else already.
Just FYI, that's the beginning of Transformers 3.
Is it? I've never seen that.
Well, it hasn't come out yet, but I saw the trailer, and that's exactly the beginning of Transformers 3. It's 1969, 1970, whatever, and I forget which mission it was supposed to be, but the beginning of it is they show a cutaway because they needed to they knew that they were going to be seeing alien technology on the moon, so they had a fake they had some filler time that was set up.
Is that the way it goes? I had no knowledge of that.
That's okay. I totally trust you. But hey, you know, it doesn't mean your theory is any less valid just because somebody else already thought of it. I can't. It'd be very interesting to think that something like that could have happened. So maybe we'll find somebody who has been studying this, and they might be able to tell us more about when that cutaway happened, like at what minute, that if there's even something like that that's locatable on the tape. Let's go to George in Hesperia, California, on Coast to Coast on Wild Card 5.
Thanks for taking my call, Ian. I have a kind of a two-part question. It's kind of scary. Do you think radiation will cause the occurrence of zombies? And if so, is there any relationship to the rapture that's been predicted for March 21st? Do you see that playing into
it? To the radiation?
Cause zombies, yes, or will that?
Causing zombies. Well, you know, there's a lot of people who would say that if the literal translation of, say, the Nicene Creed or other, you know, creedal statements by Christians that that we will be made whole again, we'll be some people liken that kind of a second coming and a rebirth as like a zombie invasion, except, of course, to Christians, at least, the belief is that we would be made whole again, not zombies. We wouldn't come crawling, you know, we wouldn't be clawing our way out of the dirt. But fair is fair. Some people have different interpretations on that. I don't know how the radiation would play, except if it were maybe something that we can't even have a model for, such as plutonium, which is really kind of the wild card in all of this. Because if that enough of that gets in the atmosphere, nobody knows exactly what would happen.
Right. And with the early warning systems in California for radar, radiation detection being offline, do you think we have any chance of seeing zombies here anytime soon?
I hope so.
Great. Thank you so much.
I hope so. And I hope it's tomorrow night on Coast to Coast when we're talking the theories of international politics and zombies. You know, really, honestly, you look at the idea of the reanimated, right? You look at the potential of a zombie government. That's one of the things we'll talk about tomorrow night. What if enough zombies come back, and as zombies are not known to attack each other, it's one of the protocols of zombies. They only eat humans. They don't eat each other. That if zombies learned to cooperate, they might form their own governments. And if there were a zombie government, then would you be able to tell the difference if you were at the DMV? If you are getting your license renewed, would you be able to tell the difference? Honestly, we'll get into that coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Let's go to Kurt in College Park, Maryland, east of the Rockies, for Open Lines. Kurt?
Yeah, good morning. How you doing, sir?
Very well, thank you.
I had an observation on nuclear, you know, everything. We've got nuclear, not vessels, but vessels in this country that apparently are built for combat. I've never heard of a problem with any kind of meltdown or anything other than that. Why wouldn't they be able to build a nuclear reactor for land-based with that level of sophistication and safety into this and you know, problem solved?
Well, if we're talking about nuclear
like submarines,
yeah. Remember, there was a breach of a nuclear submarine, right?
I don't know.
The famous, what was the one that went to the bottom of the ocean, 1960s, and it I can't remember whether they were able to confirm that it had broken apart. I'm looking at it right now. I wish I could remember. It was like a Trident sub or something like that in the 1960s. Doesn't ring a bell for you?
No.
I'll have to look that up. Let me see if I can find that at the bottom of the hour, because or maybe even like if you look at the what was the Russian sub, the Maersk or the here I am showing my ignorance. So let me see what I can find. I'll take a minute to look that up, and then I'll be able to speak with some greater authority on the subject. But I think it has happened. Or at least it's alleged to have happened. It just so happened that it was so far down to the bottom of the ocean. But maybe the bottom line here is we're talking about very small reactors. If to answer your question, a very small reactor on a sub or ship versus these six mammoth reactors that all happen to be within like 8 feet of each other. Which I don't know in hindsight whether they think that's such a good idea that they all kind of bunched them together. Let's go to Wayne in Alexandria, Louisiana, on Coast to Coast. Wayne?
Hey, Ian. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Hey, the Thrasher and the Cursed.
See, you're so smart.
Hey, blind. Hey, I'm blind, and all I do is sit around and have to think about things like that.
So what year was the Thrasher?
The Thrasher was in 61 or 60.
Okay.
Yeah, 61 or 60. I'm not absolutely sure on that. The Kursk was, I believe, was in the 90s.
Yeah, I remember the Kursk. I just couldn't remember the name of it. Okay, and then I will look that up, and I'll see if I can't have a better answer on the a T-class submarine. Royal Navy, no, that one can't be the major submarine disasters, the USS Thresher, not Thrasher.
Thrasher.
The Thrasher. Yeah, there you go. Okay, good. Glad we cleared that up.
So, what I called for was, as I told the caller, is that it's been on my mind quite a few nights. Sometimes, George Burns said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. What I mean by that is that with everything going on, supposedly going to be going on in 2011 and 2012, and then with the earthquake and the tsunami and all that, and we're just getting bombarded with all the information, and then George is having guests on that saying that, well, it's going to be like this. The United States is going to look like this, and this is going to happen. All that. And as I told your screener, I said, "Man, just relax. I just want to relax. I mean, I understand the information getting to us and going to be maybe valuable information in the end. But like the gas prices, I tell my wife, I don't want to know how much it is to fill up. Just fill the truck up. You know what I mean?"
Well, of course, yes, that's one worldview. Appreciate that. You all understand other people like to prepare and budget differently. So while you're thinking about that pocketbook issue, other people are wondering whether or not they're going to have to worry about a pocketbook issue after May 21st. Maybe for them, it's just a matter of spending all the money they have between now and then, because that'd be fun. The open lines will continue. And regardless of what happens, I'm going to be on the air. I'm going to be on the air that day that we're supposed to end. Even if the world ends, I'm still going to be on the air. I don't know how yet, but I'm going to work that out. So be listening. And we'll get to your calls coming up next. We'll give you all the numbers you need next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Just reviewing the story of the Kursk and the Thrasher, just because I didn't want to lose focus on what a previous caller talked about. Why can't we make nuclear reactors on the ground like they make them on ships? None of them have ever had a problem. I think having a problem and having a disaster are two different things. And obviously some of these disasters did not start with the reactor, but neither did the one in Japan. It started with an earthquake and then the tsunami, and it was just more than those reactors can take. They are shipping fresh water there via barges, hoping to cool the area. Looking at the Wikipedia page on Kursk, I'm reminded that at the time of the explosion, it says here, there were other ships in this Russian exercise, all of which had detected an explosion, but did not report it. That's so typical of authoritarian regimes, isn't it? Nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news. Meanwhile, there's the story about the Thresher. You know, interesting, the Thresher, I find this on the Nat Geo page about the Thresher. 9/18, April 10th, 1963, sonar operators aboard the U.S. Navy submarine rescue ship Skylark, which was accompanying the nuclear attack sub Thresher, heard a chilling sound like air rushing into an air tank, and Thresher was no more. Deep dive trials southeast of Cape Cod had come to a cataclysmic end, and all 129 men aboard perished in 8,400 feet of water. 5 minutes prior to the implosion, Thresher had radioed that it was having minor problems. According to U.S. military reviews of the accident, the most likely explanation is that a piping joint in a seawater system in the engine room gave way. The resulting spray shorted out the electronics and forced an automatic shutdown of the nuclear reactor, and therefore it had no power to stop it from going all the way to the bottom of the ocean. Very sad to think about those 129 men who, as they sank, would have heard the piping and the fittings giving way. They would have listened as the ship's hull creaked and groaned and finally deafeningly gave way to a massive water pressure. Thank God death would have been swift in just a matter of seconds, but what a terrifying ride. And a good reminder that we think we can build things to withstand our worst-case scenarios. Our problem is apparently we're not as imaginative on worst-case scenarios as we think we are, because somehow nature always comes up with something just a little bit worse than what we had thought of. We'll get back to your calls. Open lines, coast to coast. In for George, this is Ian Punnett. Open lines, coast to coast, always fun on a Friday night. Jim is in Riverbank, California, on coast to coast. Jim?
Hey, how do you do, sir? I got some comments and some questions. We was talking earlier on the migration.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what would cause the people to move from the upper Midwest to Nevada and Arizona and Idaho. I usually, when there's a migration like that, I think it's work. But I don't see what industry would draw that big of a growth to them.
I would say it's shoveling.
Mm.
It's just years of shoveling.
Yeah. I was just kind of wondering, because now the Northeast, they're kind of hurt a little bit, because South Carolina and Mississippi, they're trying to recruit businesses to go south.
Right.
But I hadn't heard of any of them going west and recruiting business.
I don't know that they are. I honestly think a lot of the population shift has to do with the weather, and it has to do with, a change in the way in which people are making a living. That if you're making a living out of your home or you've created your own business, you don't have to have a new plant open up in Santa Fe to attract people to New Mexico. You know,
That's for sure. I hadn't thought of that. Another thing. Just recently, they was interviewing the governor of Kansas.
Okay.
And he said he was losing a lot of people.
Right.
Mostly to the southeast, but it was a slow loss because he had a lot of people from California moving into Kansas.
Hmm. Well, that's true. And you know, there has been a similar response to marketing plans in North Dakota and South Dakota, which isn't far away from where I live, and they have actively sought people who are, you know, financially set to come and buy really cheap land in towns with really clean water and where there's a lot of outdoor recreation. It's just you have to do it in snowsuits 4 months out of the year. But there's a lot to do, and there's for people that are looking forward to that kind of lifestyle, there's lots of options in other places where you can live very well on, say, your Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, and the state taxes are low, and you know, so certain states that are solvent and they don't have the problems that others do where they're feeling all of the resources are overtaxed, that that may be something you see a lot more marketing of in the future.
I was wondering about just something I always thought of. If you take a state in the upper Midwest and people are moving to those four states,
right?
Now, this is a touchy question, okay? I don't know why I wonder about it. If the people are moving that way, do you think it matters on race? Like, say, white people would like to move to Idaho and maybe black people to Utah or something?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they certainly would, you know, they could use, you know, a few good soul food restaurants in Utah, if you ask me. But I think what you do see and what we I think we touched on in the first hour is there has been some shifts along racial lines, and the migration to the Southwest has been marked by a large increase in new Hispanic home ownership and residency, and that many African American families that had been living in northern Rust Belt cities are moving back to the South.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens. I mean, I don't know about white people. I don't know why they. I mean, they. But they're for other reasons and for other groups. Yeah, I think the trends are there. I don't know if they're hard lines or whether they're dotted lines, but they exist, and it's just part of what we can see. What we do know too is that in the Southwest, it's just actually the population is much more diverse than it's ever been, and that will give it some unique opportunities and some challenges. Let's go to Dawn on the international line in Vancouver, Canada, on Coast to Coast. Dawn?
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
Listen, I just adore you. I can't believe I'm calling into Coast to Coast, but you had mentioned something with regards to people not calling about Bigfoot.
Right, because we had this, here we have this amazing video on our webpage at coasttocoastam.com.
Well, listen, let me tell you, I looked at that picture and it just, it took me back because when I was a kid, I was about 7, driving from Mackenzie to Prince George, it's about a 16-hour drive from Vancouver, and to my left, the scenario was very much very similar to the picture that you have on the site.
Hmm.
But I saw a Bigfoot running into the forest out of the corner of my eye on the left-hand side of the road. And it looked quite different than that Bigfoot.
I would imagine. Picture. I would hope so. So yeah. Tell me about what you saw and what was the reaction when you saw it?
I saw it was quite a bit taller, probably about 7 feet, I think, and reddish hair and slender, but still stocky looking. And I screamed. I said, "There's Bigfoot! There's Bigfoot!" And my mom and dad, they didn't believe me, but
they didn't see it.
No,
well,
but we were just. It was a windy road. And, you know, my parents, they're not flaky by any means, these people, but I was really convincing, and my dad did slow down, and we looked at the area because it was quite a distance above ahead of us. Yeah.
You know what I heard? That somebody, a Canadian, was telling me this the other day, that I don't know if I have the exact figures straight, but maybe you'll know better, that 80% of Canada's population lives within, like, 150 miles of the border of the United States. Is that true?
I don't know. I do.
Yeah. Well, see, but I mean, like, every major Canadian city is close to the border with the U.S. And that, so only 20% or something like that of the population lives in 90% of Canada.
That's an interesting statistic.
Yeah, well, something like that.
We're pretty close, brother.
Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate that. Glad you called in, Dawn. And have a good night and call again. Let's go to Jonathan in Silver City, New Mexico, on Coast to Coast. Jonathan?
Hey there. Good morning, Ian.
Morning.
Yeah, first off, real quick, I was just going to say I believe the thresher, when it lost, I was reading about this, it lost reactor power. The issue was that ice, there was ice buildup when it tried to blow the ballast tanks, because apparently there's a phenomenon where you try to blow a lot of air through a small pipe, you can actually freeze the water out of the air. And so there was blockage in that pipe, and so then the system to blow the ballast tanks failed. And later on, of course, that was corrected. But anyways, regarding nuclear power in this Japanese disaster, I kind of find it ironic that people are saying, well, there's not going to be any new development in nuclear technology because of this disaster, when in fact it's exactly what we should do is take offline or prepare to replace old reactors and get new technology. And I heard, I don't know the exact name of it, but there's a new technology, I believe, that uses thorium for the fuel, which has, you know, it can have a much lower half-life than, say, uranium. And it's a technology where the reactor will no longer have a reaction if there's no water present, but yet, you know, it won't get hot enough to melt down, and everything just stays contained because it's also a small reactor too, so you can contain it in a small space and therefore protect it a little bit better.
I'd have to believe you, because I don't know that much about science in that respect. If you told me that the next nuclear power plants were going to be powered by the Pew-36 explosive space modulator or whatever, I totally believe you. So you say thorium, it sounds like unobtainium to me from Avatar, but I completely trust you. But I think the issue the mistake you're making is thinking that people are logical. And really, it's an emotional issue. It's not a logical one. It's just people are thinking safety, even if, safety in this case is not logical.
Right. Yeah, I totally understand that. And I'm not, if there are other technologies out there that are totally on nuclear, we should use those. I'm not exactly convinced the sun and wind will do it. I heard there was supposedly in Australia something using a deep underground vat of salt that actually does use the sun.
I love that.
To like reflect down into this and heat it up. And supposedly that can also create steam for power generation.
Oh, that sounds really cool, actually. So one more thing we'll have to look into coming up in 2011. Thanks for those thoughts. Let's see, who would be next? Nico, east of the Rockies in Chicago on Coast to Coast. Nico?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Couldn't be better. Thanks. Go ahead.
Well, I'm happy to get through on my birthday, actually. This is a cool experience, actually. But
happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you. My question is actually David Icke. He was on Wednesday with George. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all. I'm telling you, man, that guy, like, after listening to that show, that, like, seriously opened my eyes to a lot of, weird things in politics and money systems around the world and stuff, and wow.
What do you think was his best point?
Well, talking about how all stuff that they've planned 50 years ago or something, that it's coming to fruition now,
Okay, but give me an example of that.
Well, Libya. Why are we in Libya for some reason? And then all of a sudden, how he says that NATO is, that they follow the rules of the, of the elitist, or, these people that make all the rules and make the.
You're talking about the Babylonian Brotherhood, the reptilian humanoids.
Yeah.
So do you accept the theory that George W. Bush and Queen Elizabeth are reptilian humanoids?
Well, I can be halfway positive to say there's some shape-shifting reptilians out there, and maybe, George W. Bush and possibly some CNN people or some Fox News Chicago people that supposedly had a glitch on the TV one time when one of the telecaster, newscaster, supposedly was shape-shifting, and they said, "Oh, we have technical difficulties," so they're out there.
Wait, this happened on Chicago television?
Well, on like the Fox News in the morning, Chicago, you know, like they have two
Bob Surratt? Bob Surratt is a shapeshifter?
No. This is about maybe a year ago.
Oh, okay. All right.
My buddy I work with, he saw it live on TV. And
a guy shapeshifted on Fox News, morning news, on the Fox channel in Chicago.
It was actually the lady.
The lady shapeshifted.
Yeah. And then he said there was one on YouTube or something, on CNN or something, or some one other, you know, national news channel where they... the same type of thing where it was like a glitch and they you know, he said it looked like it lost cable reception or something for a split second. But right before that happened, the lady looked like she was shape-shifting or something. And, you know, he was telling me, oh, maybe it was the TV anchor, you know, the guys behind the cameras freaking out and saying, all right, cut the feed for a second.
So that would tell us then that the cameraman and all the technical people are also hip to the shape-shifting thing, and they knew they had a shape-shifting anchor that they would be prepared to cut away from that.
Well, you never know. I mean, all these, and again, you know, that David Icke said that all the news and all the media and everything's fed through, you know, and everything's only said what they want to be said, you know, on news and on radio and all that stuff.
All right. So. Well, I'm going to look for that on YouTube. I'm going to see whether coming up here in the minutes ahead, I can't find any evidence of a shapeshifter captured on a news channel and then put up on YouTube. Cross your fingers. And we'll get to, I think, another call just before the top of the hour if we hustle. And is it Stefan in Chico, California, on Coast to Coast?
Hey.
Hi.
I'm a first-time caller. I'm so happy.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, so anyways, I was down in... San Diego, down in the desert down there, and I saw, it was really weird because I was just down there with my friends chilling, you know. I look up in the sky, I see a huge triangle of lights. My friends are like, holy crap, the aliens are coming to get us. I'm like, George Norrie should be here.
Well, and so that's when you whip out your cell phone camera and you capture that video and you shoot it over to us. No?
Yeah.
Well,
no,
next...
I didn't have my phone with me.
Keep it handy because we need that. And thank you. Remember, too, that we always love those contributions at our webpage at coasttocoastam.com. We try to keep track of those, just like the Nobby video from Bigfoot, and George will be doing a Bigfoot show coming up next week. Do we have time for Anthony? Anthony in Orange County, if we keep it fast, on Coast to Coast before we head into our last hour here. Anthony, go ahead.
Hey, Ian. How's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Okay, I got a theory. All right. Bible said the rapture, never set a date. Okay?
Right.
Japan, earthquake, tsunami, people are missing. What if the person who discovered the date of May 11th was off? Instead of May 11th, it was March 11th.
Well, it's May 21st. So they have to be off by a month and change, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, all right. So you're saying maybe those people were raptured.
What I'm saying, like in any other earthquake that's going to be happening in the future, more will disappear. Like you said, from May to October.
Okay. Well, I believe me, if I were a family member, I'd love that thought, that they weren't carried away by the rushing tsunami waters, that they got raptured. Of course, that means that the rest of us listening right now are totally screwed, right? If it's already happened and we're all here, that means there was only, you know, like 10,000 worth rapturing and they were all in Japan. Oh, well, I guess we just must find a way to go on, at least for one more hour. I found the shape-shifting news anchor on YouTube. I'll tell you more about that, too. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett.